Get ready for the Ocelli Effect. Ocelli.
Fourth day of March. Yeah, that's right. Fourth day of March, 2016. We are not quite in the Ides just yet, but beware of them. Anyway, this is the Ocelli Effect, broadcast live on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Of course, it is the fourth day of March, according to that thing we call a calendar. And as I am live at the moment, it is just after 8 p.m. on the east coast of the artist formerly known as the United States of America. And who knows what time or what day it is, wherever you may be, because this may be recorded for you. That might be something that you caught in the archives at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or elsewhere, or it may be a rebroadcast. Who knows? Check your own clock or digital representation of that wind-up toy and find out. And that's that. Anyway, tonight I decided to once again have on Brother Gregory Williams. Now, interesting reactions to the last time that Brother Gregory was on the show, because I got to tell you that people did not expect me to bring a gentleman like this on. It's kind of odd to me, though. You see, anybody who's speaking truth is somebody that I want to talk to. And quite honestly, again, it is incumbent upon me to bring anyone who is speaking the truth to this show as best I can. Sometimes I bring people on who I'm not too sure about, and it's for the examination. It's to present something to you, to give you an idea, to have the revelation of the conversation as I describe it, right? So when we do this, it's not always about just having people agree with me necessarily, but it's about exploring their truth. And really, even though the show has my name on it and all that kind of stuff, it isn't about me. This isn't an ego trip of any kind. So, you know, how dare someone go against my particular view of the world? No, that's not the game we play here. So, keeping all of that in mind, I think Brother Gregory is with me now, and I'm happy to call him Brother Gregory, by the way, not simply because that is the title that he seems to carry, or to even give a nod to the cloth. To be honest with you, the fact is that it's very nice to refer to many people as our brothers. I think of all of us as brothers and sisters in one way or another, quite honestly, although we're not always happy with all of our siblings. And so I very happily call this man Brother Gregory because I think of him in that way, just with my limited discussions with him, hearing the perspective he's coming from. And definitely it is something that, that needs to be aired and, is aired in many other places, but we never have had anyone who is a speaker like Brother Gregory on this show. So, even if I do wind up having some disagreements with some of his viewpoints, I can assure you that I would say that even in that case, it is something worth examining, and I'm happy to do so. So thanks for joining us once again, Brother Gregory. How are you this evening?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Well, you know, I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay, actually, today. Not every day that I can say that I'm doing okay, to be honest with you. You know, I'm often involved in things that tend to leave me pretty stressed by the time I get to the microphone at night. But honestly, today was not a heavy stress day, so I'm actually feeling pretty good today to begin with, and that is remarkable to me. But how are you actually feeling and observing the world around you today, really?
Well, observing the world around me, I could be extremely frustrated. you know, it's funny, that this whole idea of people ask you how you doing, and I have people call me up asking me that all the time, and it's kind of a, you know, it's just kind of a way in which we introduce a conversation or something. But the reality is I almost always say great or fine or, you know, same old, same old. I never have a complaint, even though, you know, I even notice my wife does this. That she, you know, not too many weeks ago, she fell off the haystack and ended up in a wheelchair for a couple of weeks. And people would ask her how she's doing, and she would say, fine. She wouldn't, you know, while she had talked to other people, and she asked them how they're doing, and they got, oh, this is terrible and that is terrible, but they're not in a wheelchair. So it's all perspective, you know. You know, so, you know, when you see disaster all around you, and you can still say, yeah, I'm doing fine. The rest of the world's falling apart, but I'm doing okay. But you just deal with things, and you, you know, we're just not complainers. I've even had to go to the doctor. While I'm in the doctor, they ask me how I'm doing, and I have this tendency to say, oh, I'm fine. But then I thought, wait a minute. I'm in the doctor's office. I have to be half dead before you could get me in here. So it's all relative. But things, you know, are going pretty good. It's kind of interesting that you brought up the topic that you did, when I emailed you just, or texted you just before the show, because that happened to be kind of a topic that other people have been bringing up on the network and even people outside of our network. So.
Well, you know, that's the truth about it. I recognize patterns in a lot of discussion. I recognize patterns in media. I recognize patterns in the general population sometimes. And I always think it's never by accident. And truth is that lately I'm noticing a whole lot more discussion about the end times, this concept of the end times, the end of the world, the things that are, you know, about to happen, the Armageddon, the apocalypse, the, I mean, there are many, many names for it in many, many different languages, but the truth is that just in recent months, even, I would say that there is a big increase in the amount of discussion about the end times. And it's not really like Chicken Little screaming that the sky is falling, the times are ending. It's different this time. You know, I noticed another point in my life where I saw this sort of emerge pretty heavily. And that was, when I was much younger in the late 70s, early 80s, there was this kind of discussion, and that you could sort of tie to the fears of a nuclear world. Right. That kind of thing was prevalent. You know, there was a few cultural phenomena that fed into that as well. And it just seemed to be a cycle that emerged and then disappeared. And of course, when we were confronted with the events of 9/11, there started to be a lot of discussions about end times, and not necessarily in a biblical sense or in a what shall I say, in a prophetic sense, but just the discussion of the topic. And it was there because of the anxiety both times. Now I'm seeing it emerge, but it's almost as if it's matter of fact. It's got a different tone to it. And, again, I say I'm not a Christian, so I'm not going to churches. I'm not listening to sermons very often. And people who are not even likely to be confronted with the Book of Revelations or the story of, you know, the apocalypse or the different epochs that have occurred, may occur, will occur, et cetera, et cetera. Even if they're not exposed to that material in a constant way, it seems as though the discussion is still emerging about this concept of, I again hold up air quotes for the listeners, the end times. And I guess you're noticing that too. And what, you know, I guess the first question off the top of my head is, why do you think that is happening?
Well, you know, there's always been a fascination with end times, disaster. I mean, we've had, you know, a few years ago we had movies coming out like Deep Impact. And, you know, of course there was, you know, 2000, you know, the 1999-2000 calendar deal where all of a sudden everything was supposed to go awry at the millennium. The end of the Aztec calendar, that was supposed to be, I mean, what did I think they even had a movie that was, what was it, 2012 or something. So there's always a certain fascination about this, and it comes in waves, and there is kind of a quantum effect in the thinking of mankind. There is a collective consciousness as well as a collective unconsciousness. There's certain things that we just will not think about as a people. And there are other things that kind of move through society in kind of ripples and waves. So I've seen this for years and years and years. I've seen it close up in people. I've traveled around the country, and we had our whirlwind tour where I traveled all over the country and met with people everywhere. And you'll always find this element. But what I noticed actually in the last few days is from very unusual sources, from people who work every day, don't, you know, they're not reading the Book of Revelations like you mentioned or anything, but, you know, they just sold their house. Actually, I know several people sold their house and got out of Dodge, moved out of the city, moved into the country. Mm-hmm. Lots of people doing this. That is out of character, something that they normally wouldn't be doing, normally wouldn't be thinking. I know some people have been preparing for the end times for ever since I've known them, but I've noticed more and more people suddenly just deciding that they don't want to be in a major metropolis area. They're looking, they're not necessarily digging in some distant cabin, but they're definitely showing signs of quietly preparing. They're not doing it with a big group. They're not reading Revelations. They're not walking around with a sign that says the end of the world is at hand. But I think one of the reasons for that is collectively, you know, when we watch the media and everything, we see the economy. Mm. That certainly doesn't look good. There's been for at least 4 or 5 decades now, they've been telling us that the big quake, you know, here on the West Coast, we're not talking like an earthquake. We're talking about this subduction quake that will level whole forests and send tidal waves pouring in from the ocean, you know, miles and miles, leveling forests. And back before Lewis and Clark, but now we'll be leveling, you know, housing developments, whole towns and cities and schools and hospitals will be within the floodplains.
And that's been part of the discussion in the scientific community for many years.
Years. And then recently they've talked about the possibility of EMPs from, you know, North Korea being helped by China to do it. So, because China couldn't do it, because then there would be, you know, somebody be shooting back at China. But if North Korea does it, they're already in the dark, because there's hardly a light on in North Korea. They're back nearly in the Stone Age now for most of the population. But an EMP could cripple the United States. And, I mean, big people in government, there's a whole agency in the government that's supposed to be preparing this, saying we're not prepared. And they're saying that there was a major blackout in the United States from an EMP that literally 90% of Americans could be dead after the first year because of the breakdown in, you know, the structure of society. You know, no refrigeration, no food preparation, no gas going to the farmers, no crops taken in, and there's no reserve. Like, there used to be when I worked on wheat farms 20, 30 years, actually probably 40 years ago now, there was 6-7 years supply of wheat in silos on the farm spread from North Dakota to Texas that would supply the entire United States for 7 years, or 7 years. Today, we don't have that. We don't have a year's supply. worldwide, we don't have 30 days supply.
Now, you know what's interesting to me about that is that if I think back to biblical stories, you know, and you remember the story of Joseph who was taken into slavery and winds up rising, you know, in Egypt and all of that because he explains to the emperor about the dreams and then he places him above other people, above all else except the the Pharaoh, right? And all of that story, that was all about the preparation for something that was coming, and he saw it in a prophetic way. Now, of course, in recent times, the most recent events, and I didn't discuss this to begin with when I was setting up, was that we dealt with the Y2K problem, and that made people very nervous because if the computers failed, we might have a system-wide failure. And then, of course, after that, there was the Mayan calendar scare because there's no more dates on the Mayan calendar after 2012, according to most scholars, and that's the end of the world right there. What was it? It was supposed to be December 21st, 2012, right?
Right.
And those things were introduced into the culture as a fascination. And then when they came closer to that time, people reacted in a way that you would based on built up anxiety, that was, you know, programmed. And I can see that happening, but this is now different, I think. There doesn't seem to be that upcoming event that someone can point to and say, you know what, we can see this coming exactly. There's many, many different point of views about what might cause it. You bring up the idea of the EMP, the collapse of simply the technological because of the electricity being gone, and that would interrupt fuel and therefore interrupt food and interrupt the processes and society in general. These things are all complex issues that have been sitting there for quite a while, but it's still emerging seemingly in the collective consciousness now again, but without that trigger point that people are all pointing to. And I'm wondering about that. I mean, do you see a difference there, or am I just splitting hairs?
Well, you know, whether there's a different, we have somebody who's in our network to help program a system where computers supposedly pick their random number generator systems. And, you know, normally in a computer software, there's actually a list of random numbers, and it runs through that, and it picks another number. But there's actually a way in which these computers actually are doing random, supposedly random, yet they see patterns developing based on news items in society. You know, you're supposed to get so many zeros, so many, you know, positives, so many yeses, so many nos, even in any kind of random generator, but they actually see the numbers being shifted by social media events like 911. You started seeing actual a shift in mechanical, you know, computers linked together all over the country generating these random numbers. So you start realizing that even random isn't really random. There's actually forces at work, unseen forces at work. And what I think is happening, besides the fact that obviously if you could even just put two and two together, you realize that we live in one of the most vulnerable societies ever created in the history of mankind. Because most of the people in this society can't produce any food. They can't even stay warm during the winter without this technological society functioning and working at a good capacity. Without that, people who are not seeing, you know, the North Koreans coming over the hill, or, you know, coronal mass ejections coming from the sun which can cause the same effect as an EMP, they're still getting out of Dodge. They just don't feel right. You know, in my own life, I've had situations literally where I suddenly have to stop the car. I just slam on the brakes. I don't see anything coming. And I saved the life of more than a dozen people because everybody else around me slammed on their brakes too. And unseen, nobody saw it coming because it was coming around a blind corner. a gasoline truck was careening out of control and went through the intersection, missed the cars that went ahead of us just by inches, almost looked like it teleported through them, missed the front bumper of my vehicle and the vehicles next to me and all the people behind us. Of course, they didn't go across. We should have all been in that intersection when this gas truck came through at 60 miles an hour. I didn't see it coming, but I knew I had to put on my brake, and I just literally, you know, it wasn't thinking. It just did it. It seemed right at the time. I could tell you dozens of stories where lives were saved because somebody went by some not logical, some sort of gut feeling that I just needed to do this. And this is the story I'm getting from a lot of people. I'm in contact with people all over. They're not always a part of our network, but I just know a lot of people. Mm. And this is the feedback I'm getting, not only from them, but from people they know.
See, I think of this as the falling glass scenario. And everybody goes, what do you mean by that? Well, okay, it's happened to me a few times where a glass, and I have particularly poor eyesight, but a glass falls off of a table. If it wouldn't hit the floor, it would shatter. I have been able to, with great reflex, without any sort of pre-knowledge of this thing getting ready to topple, caught a glass and prevented it from shattering. Now, that's interesting. Okay, fine. You prevented a glass from being shattered. No big deal. But here's the thing. I think of it in this way. I probably caught that glass so that someone's foot could not be cut, so that they didn't have to be taken to an emergency room and possibly be in the way of the surgeon or the person who's going to stitch them up, because that person needs to be there to save someone else's life. And then there is a ripple effect from this very small thing, which I have done, because a whole potential disaster could have been generated based on that one small event. And sometimes it's larger, sometimes it's smaller, but I call it the falling glass effect.
Yeah, there are these ripple effects that take place. And a lot of times when people tell me, you know, should I buy this land, they ask me these. People are always asking me for advice, and I'm always telling people, I haven't got a clue what you should do. I mean, I could barely figure out what I should do every day. God's not going to give me revelation about you. God will give you revelation about you. So
right.
I tell people, you know, go out on the land, pick up the dirt, sniff it, feel it, and decide. Ask yourself, ask this inner voice, this inner guiding light inside yourselves, that you should be listening to all the time. Should I buy this land? Should I do this? Should I go there? And I don't know how many times I could tell you about the fact that I did what was illogical outside of my nature, and it ended up sometimes, like I said, with the gas truck, saved numerous people's lives. I mean, when we started back up, I didn't even miss a beat. I saw that guy go through, and I thought, wow, that was lucky. Kind of thing. I didn't even say anything. I was talking to somebody else. And then I started up, but the car next to me, he had slammed on his brakes too. He couldn't see the truck coming. I couldn't see the truck coming, and he couldn't see past me. I was in a big truck myself. And when we started going through the intersection, he sped up, honked his horn, and he did one of those okay signs to me, because he realized that he slammed on his brakes because he saw my vehicle slamming on it, you know, coming to this sudden jolting stop. And he didn't see the truck. Nobody saw it. And it just missed the fronts of our vehicle by inches. But if we had just gone, a couple more inches, and my truck would have careened into his, and then a fireball from the gasoline truck, and I mean, there would have been people dying everywhere. And
right.
He knew that we had just saved his life by slamming on the brakes. He didn't know that I didn't see the vehicle. We just started up because the light turned green, and the guys ahead of us start up. You know how you do that? You follow the cars through the intersection.
Yeah,
but
that's
you
what
couldn't
almost everybody
see what
does,
was coming through the underpass. So it was an amazing moment, but I still to this day can't tell you why I slammed on the brakes. But it saved people's lives. That's kind of a dramatic event, but the reality is there's a lot of little things and choices that we make during the day, during our lives, and they will have repercussions. that we can't even imagine. We can't even figure out. There's no way we could have figured out that I was going to need this day, and yet I put it in my pocket. For years, that was a joke around here with my kids watching me go to work, as I would look back at the shop, and I would say, oh, we're going to need that. And they'd ask me why. And I says, I don't know, but we're going to need it. And we loaded up, and sure enough, we would need it. Now, there were many times where I would argue with myself, and I'd say, oh, no, we're not going to need that. And yet I would see it again, and I think, oh, well, I should load that. But why? I'm not going to do that kind of work today. We don't need that. And all of a sudden I realized, who am I arguing with? Why am I not picking that tool up? It'll take me a second to pick that up and throw that in the truck. But I'm arguing with my intuition. My intellect is saying, intellectually, you know you're not going to need that tool. But something deep inside me that sees into the quantum that we all have is telling me, pick up that tool. You're going to need that today. And I've learned over the years to listen to that still small voice that's telling you. It's not a voice. You don't hear guys in your head saying, you know, bring the electric screwdriver.
No, it's just the effect.
I'm going to need that. And I think that's what's happening to a lot of people, is they just feel like we need to get out of town. We need to get out of debt. We need, you know, somebody just told me, actually today, somebody just told me, you know, starting tomorrow, he said, I don't need my job anymore. You know, where he was living before, he was paying a mortgage. He sold that place, bought a cheaper place, and now he can move into the cheaper place, and it's out in the country. Still working in the city, but he's going back, and he's going to do the commute, and he says, I don't need that job anymore. My family's got a safe place. But he isn't a survivalist. He isn't thinking in those terms at all. He's a workaday guy. But for some reason, I mean, he wouldn't even discuss that with a lot of people, but he shared it with me because he thinks that something big is going to happen. But I can't tell you exactly what. I can tell you when I was 5 years old, when I first saw the sun through a telescope, where it was projected on the screen, I knew that was significant. And when Jesus said, he says, look for signs in the sun and the moon and the stars. And in those days, the word for stars also meant planets. And I realized that why is Jesus, an itinerant preacher in the middle of the deserts in Judea, telling us to look at for signs in the sun? And personally, I think that big things are going to happen because of things on the sun. But I think big things are already happening on Earth, and they're happening in people. What probably really concerns me most or inspires me most about when I look out into the world and see people all preparing for the end times or whatever, is that there's a change taking place in the ability of people to comprehend the truth. Most of the people are absolutely oblivious to the truth. You can tell that by just watching the election.
No kidding.
If somebody wants entertainment, there's entertainment, I guess. I would change channels probably, but the reality is that other people are realizing that it's just a complete dog and pony show, and that the real important things in life are somewhere else. And I think people have been realizing that for years. People have been moving out into the country. People have a fascination with growing their own food. We've grown our own food for years and years, but we were just fascinated with it. I can tan hides, I can spin wool, I can do all these things, but I can also fix a computer and write books on law and history, because I have a variety of interests. But I find it fascinating to take something that somebody threw away and turn it into something of value, to take old things and make them work again. And it's given us a certain amount of insight into more maybe rebuilding society. Here's a thought for people who always worry about end times. Every place it talks about the end of the world in the Bible. The word world there, there's five different words that they translate into world in the New Testament. But every time they talk about the end of the world, they use a word that doesn't mean world or planet. It means the end of an age.
You know,
end
I've
of a
tried
period
to,
of time.
Yeah, I've tried to point that out to people. That if you look at the mistranslation there, generally speaking, you are looking at the end of an age. You're
and what happens
at
the end of an age? Another age.
Another
up.
Age begins, yes. You know, and I've even been through this trying to explain to people that there is some symbolism that one can see regarding, like, you know, the Jesus fish, thing that you see out there, right? Even if you look at it from an astrological sense, there are astrological clues that indicate to me that based on, you know, using the planetary bodies as a timepiece, some of these things make a little more sense. It appears as though an age begins and ends at certain points in the text. And he's telling you about another age that's going to end. And it does seem as though we're in that time period when that age is going to end. All right. Based on my understanding of astrology. And it's
well, even astronomy, because of the fact that those symbols that right. they have there in space, that we've over the years have written down and people have looked at, you know, the Pisces and Aquarius and all this stuff. Those are actually, they are moving through the astronomical hemisphere in projection of our planet. So those things may be a prophetic timekeeper of different periods of time.
Right.
You know, it was amazing to me when I discovered that the sun had a solar cycle of 11 years. Doesn't take 11 years to go around, but it has this 11-year solar cycle, which is actually almost 22 years because it reverses its poles every 11 years. And so, which is an amazing idea, reverses from north to south every 11 years. And so a whole cycle is almost 22 years. Well, the sun is careening through space in this galaxy that is moving through what is not always a uniform space. This is why scientists are now noticing that the speed of light seems to be slowing down. Because there's a theory that we're actually moving into a more dense area of space. Just like there are rings around Saturn, there's rings around the galaxy. And so as you move through these different areas of the galaxy, things will change. Time will change. Density will change. The laws of physics will change. Not really the laws themselves, but the way in which we interpret them. All of our power lines, they hang the high voltage lines a certain distance apart because they know that it won't arc if it's between this space and that, you know, this distance to the next line.
Right.
But you can create conditions in you know the place where our planet is moving in space where suddenly they don't need that much distance to arc. They can arc in a shorter distance or the same distance. You can pull them farther apart and they'll still arc. Well, those kinds of things may be going on all and we just our lifespans on this earth are so short. And unless we look at the bigger picture in history, we're not going to realize that we're moving all the time. But I believe that inside us, inside our minds, we have a way of seeing this. Everybody does. But what's coming in our future, if you could actually see it, is so frightening that most people are going to block it out. They don't want to know. They don't want to see, and they won't listen, and they won't hear that inner guiding force. I think some people are, and that's the good side, that some people are actually waking up and beginning to act upon what they're seeing in their hearts. They don't necessarily have a clearer picture, but they realize, you know, we should be doing this. So they start doing it. And they don't even know why. They don't. It's not a matter of logic. It's a matter of something in them moving them to
right.
do certain things. They may not do it well, but they're at least starting to listen to this inner guidance.
Yeah, see, and like I said, I personally know that there are certain things. I mean, I'm beginning to embrace my intuition a bit more than I used to. To be honest with you, for instance, I know very shortly I have to pick up my family and move them somewhere. I am also aware in my mind that that this is going to the location, the direction, the cause. All these things are going to present themselves to me. I'm fully confident in that. And I simply know that the path will be laid before me, and that's a very small thing, and it sounds a little crazy, and to trust your gut only to make a large decision like that, but quite honestly, I described this to Kim, and she agrees with me, you know, that yeah, this seems to be right. In other words, we're both feeling the same thing without ever having discussed it, that that a change in location is going to have to be done very soon, although we have absolutely no indication of that, you know, essentially at the moment. There's really nothing really changing that would cause us to have to change our location, but we know that that's coming, right? And that's happening more and more. There's a lot of situations like that in my own personal life. And I'm hearing this from other people, too, that they're being inspired to make changes in their lives that normally would be triggered by very very solid events. Something would have to present itself to change a situation so that they have to affect another change and consciously decide to do something different, change jobs, leave their partners or join a partner or, place their kids into a different schooling situation or things like that. They don't have an indication that they need to do these things. They're simply having an intuition that's beginning to guide them to do these things. And it's not everybody, but there's a lot more people that are saying these kinds of things to me that, you know what, I don't want to tell everybody this, but it seems as though I'm being guided to do this, not necessarily by something I can, you know, quantify and tell you about right now in this situation and that, but I just seem to be being told in some
right.
way
and
or another. Yeah.
This is the thing that people are coming, Chris and I, a lot of people confide in me maybe more than they do a lot of other people, but the reality is that's what I'm hearing people say, and I've already seen this. You know, I may have said this on your show. It might have been on another show. I'm on the radio more times than I can keep track. But there was a guy in the Midwest, and he was supposed to go to work and fly to Washington, D.C. and or somewhere back east and settle this big account, and he decided not to. And then his wife was deciding this and ended up that they missed being destroyed by a tornado.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, their family missed being destroyed by the tornado. Their house was absolutely destroyed. But because he was home, because circumstances, what his wife was feeling, because the news people were saying, no threat, not going this way, it's going this other way, there's no danger here, but they felt there was. And they're not the kind of people that normally panic. And they packed up, they moved down the road, you know, in a matter of minutes, and the tornado came through and it was throwing tractors into the next property. I mean, it was absolutely devastating, destroyed everything. The interesting thing is they had decided to move just shortly before that, and they were trying to figure out how to tell their kids, we're going to have to sell all our stuff in order to move all the way out here to the East Coast. I mean, to the West Coast, they were going to come to a state right next to us, actually. And guess what? They didn't have to sell everything because the tornado took it all away.
Yes.
So instead
wow.
of the father being the villain who made them sell all their stuff, they have like 10, 11 kids in the family. that now the father's the hero because he's taking them away from this tornado place.
Well, you know, and what? And I'm going to tell you one last little personal story, and then I promise I'm going to stop interrupting you with my personal stuff. But here's the thing.
Okay.
You remember Hurricane Katrina, right?
And, oh, yeah.
And, okay. Well, I was living in New Jersey at the time, and I was part of a company which worked through an oil company, and we were going to pick up this entire smaller organization for a business opportunity in another state. And a few permutations were made, a few calculations were made, and it was decided that we were going to expand in a very big way and go to New Orleans. And it's funny because I had been a very, very responsible, strong asset in this company, but I somehow made some terrible mistakes that wound up killing that deal, basically. And it was very much like, my boss was actually sitting there and considering what to do with me because I'd been such a great asset up to that point. And he did not know whether he wanted to even keep me working for him in any way, shape, or form. And I was doing well. Except for this thing, I had screwed up the deal to go to New Orleans. Well, during the month, okay, after this, this was going back and forth, and then we were told about what happened when the hurricane hit. And it turns out that the area that all of us would have transplanted from New Jersey to go down there and be in was completely destroyed. A lot of people lost their lives there. I mean, you're aware of what happened during that hurricane. But basically, through a mistake that I normally would not have made, and through costing a man money who normally I did very well for, and he was considering what to do with me for that 30 days, even put me on vacation temporarily. It turns out that probably everybody who was part of our organization would have been killed had we gone through with that deal, which was supposed to, get us all in a much better position. Everybody was supposed to get pay raises. Many people in the company were angry with me for it. But when it turned out that I had probably prevented us all from being in the path of that destruction, it was a very strange kind of thing, because my boss said, you're the only reason why we didn't go. And if you take a look at a map, this is the area we would have been in. I mean, the businesses would have been destroyed. The places that we were planning to live or that we would have most likely lived in would have been also devastated. I mean, we would have been underwater. That's all there is to it.
Right.
That was the first time I ever felt something like that, where it wasn't even I did a positive thing. I actually did a negative thing that turned out to be a positive thing. And it was very odd because I could not for the life of me figure out how I had even come to make the errors that caused this to happen. It just seemed to be outside of my control. And apparently it was for a good reason because, I'm still here and I had only had one child at that point. I've had two more since. A lot of things would have been different in the world had we been part of what went on down there. And, it would have been a whole set of families that would have been without some family members at this point and so on and so forth. So it's kind of odd. Sometimes even the things that appear to be bad things or things that appear to be mistakes or negatives in one way or another can even turn out to be that which saves your life, and again, it was something that was not really within my control. I acted on instinct and had made some mistakes. That's all there was to it,
So one of the things that has been a constant point of contention of mankind from the beginning was this idea of the tree of knowledge and the tree of life. And you have this tree of knowledge in the garden and the tree of life in the garden. And the reality is that these are metaphors for something that goes on in your own mind. In your mind, your mind is a tree of knowledge. but it's also a tree of life. It has these dendritic connections, and if you were to take all these nerve endings and draw them on a board, they look like a tree. You look mm-hmm. like a tree. All the nerve endings moving up in your body. We have several articles that preparing you about this that shows the scientific study and how these two different, it's actually one tree, but it's actually two trees at the same time, is this nervous system in your body. And one is based on facts and information and calculation. You know, we have left brain, right brain thing going on. Excuse me. And the other one is this intuitive. And they're both operating and functioning in this same neurological tree that's in your mind. But one isn't based on facts. It's based on something else. This thing we call intuition, inspiration, whatever. This creative thing that kind of knows something. And, you know, of the last 100, maybe 200 years, man has been pushing and pushing more that you have to develop the tree of knowledge, because that's the answer. Knowledge is what drives your success. Know this, know that, put the information together, and you come up with an answer. But in reality, all the great discoveries have come from the other side of your brain, which is intuition. The knowledge is the tool. You know, the different, facts, right. Information. But how they fit together is often intuitive. And I see that's what the war is actually going on right now.
Well, you know, your skill sets behave in this way, too.
I've got to get a drink here.
No, it's okay. Take a moment, get a drink, because I see people's skill
sets. I don't want to do a Hillary coughing routine here.
You know, I it's okay, man. It happens.
We're all friends here. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, the point is this tree of life and tree of knowledge is really what warring in us all the time. That when I was back there in the shop saying, intellectually, I don't need that tool today. I'm not doing that kind of work. But intuitively, my other side of me is saying, yes, you do. And I'm arguing between the two. And mm-hmm. I think this is what all of us have to do, is start to listen to that intuitive side and learn when it is your intuitive side and not just some sort of an emotional, ate a piece of moldy cheese kind of thing that might be affecting why you're making decisions. And this is finding yourself, knowing, what's actually making you tick. And then you have this extra asset of having this intuitive knowledge. My wife is extremely intuitive, not very intellectual, doesn't want to calculate everything out and all that kind of stuff. But she, I use her as a springboard a lot of time to know whether or not, as a second witness, because if I come up with something, how do I know that's not my intellect simply telling me? But if she comes up with it independently, then I know that, well, there's two of us that have the same intuitive model of what we should be doing. And that's very important that we develop that. But most people don't even know it exists in us, this quantum connection to know how. People wonder how I found out all these different things that I wrote in the books, how I find all this information, how I put it all together with all these footnotes. They think it explains things so clearly. And I tell you, well, what I'm doing is taking something that I knew intuitively was true, and I'm proving it intellectually in,
right.
Putting it down in an intellectual argument in a book. But the reason I add the intellectual argument is to help you unload all the other garbage that you've already got in there. You won't believe me when I tell you what you think is true is false unless I can put on the other side of the scale some more intellectual information to kind of pry you out of what you already believe is true that just ain't so. but that's the battle in us. The tree of knowledge is a good thing. It's put into the garden, into our minds. What we weren't supposed to do is use it as a source to decide good and evil. That's what they call it, the knowledge of good and evil. We're not supposed to decide what's right, what's wrong, based on intellectual, scientific examination. Ultimately, how we know what, should I move to New Orleans or should I not move to Orleans, is actually rooted in the intuitive. Now, intuitively, deep down inside you, you may have known we can't go there. That would be bad, you know, like Joseph's dream.
Right.
It wasn't his dream. It was Pharaoh's dream, but he didn't know what it meant. Joseph had to tell him what it meant. Well, you maybe deep down intuitively knew we can't go there because there's destruction waiting for us. But I don't know how to explain that to my boss. I don't even know how to explain it to myself because I have no information or facts. So subconsciously, your brain causes you to sabotage the trip.
Yeah.
Because you're actually listening to the intuitive side. Now, I can't say that that's actually what's happening, but intuitively, I suspect that it is what happened, that you actually were sabotaging yourself because intuitively you knew there's something wrong about going there. I don't know what it is, but I don't think we should all go there.
Right, and I've found that reversing that process is kind of difficult, but it's something that I have embraced in the past few years, that that quite often I take the intuition and then intellectually back it. When I was doing things the other way around, to be honest with you, everything was much more difficult, seemingly to me, to accomplish. If I needed to intellectually prove it out and then ask my intuition afterwards, basically. You know, I don't know why that is, but it seems to me as though I had it out of order most of my life up until recent years.
What we're taught in schools and what we're taught in the world today because of our, you know, this society is heavily for the last, because of the Industrial Revolution, because of the technological nature of society today, everything is, you know, that your kid is not successful unless he has these A grades based on intellectual accumulation of information and knowledge.
Right.
But the creative, intuitive side that tells you you can have all the same facts as this scientist over here, but you say, well, yeah, but they're rearranged differently because intuitively you know they are. That's the thing with facts. You can prove almost anything, you know, like the old, I don't know if you're old enough to remember when they proved that Paul McCartney was dead. It was, there was some law student who was told he had to prove something that everybody knew wasn't true, but he had to accumulate this information to prove that it was true. So he set about to prove that Paul McCartney was dead, and he put it together, you know, he ran recordings backwards, and he put together this elaborate argument that Paul McCartney was dead and that they've got a doppelganger replacing him.
Mm-hmm.
And people believed it. And some people still believe it.
It's still a popular conspiracy theory, to be honest with you. It's one of those things I encounter every now and then to this day because of the work of that kid.
I could be wrong. Maybe he is dead. But the reality is that the guy who proved it just took that as a random idea and began to put together the evidence to try to prove it. He didn't come to the conclusion and then tried to convince everybody else. He didn't believe it was true. And that's the power of the intellect. If you arrange the facts that a person receives in a particular order, you can convince people of almost anything without that counterbalance of that intuitive knowledge. And this, you know, I'm a firm believer that there is a quantum. You can call it spiritual, you can call it quantum, you can call it, you know, whatever, influence in mankind, that collective spiritual consciousness. And actually is collective spiritual unconsciousness, that certain people are making choices, moral choices, not your basic moral choices, do I steal this, do I not steal that, but just the idea of coveting or hating someone. And this causes effects in the spiritual realms of our thinking.
Right. Listen, we're gonna go up into the first break here, and we're gonna continue this conversation. I want to get into the concept of the Christ consciousness as well. That's another term which is pushed around quite a bit, and also further explore this concept of the end times and the awareness that's seeming to come around to a great many in the population. My guest tonight, Brother Gregory Williams on the Ocelli Effect. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
This is Rick Simpson, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
The last hour of American Freedom Radio you have been listening to is proudly sponsored in part by BigReggaeMix.com, the global healing station.
Produced by Mitch Santel and executive produced by none other than Errol Brown, winner of 5 Grammy Awards and the last producer and engineer of Bob Marley. Visit us now at BigReggaeMix.com for the latest show schedule, updates, and blog postings. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, too. BigReggaeMix.com.
I have this feeling, man, because you know there's a handful of people actually run everything. That's true. It's provable. Handful, very small elite run and own these corporations, which include the mainstream media. I have this feeling who's ever elected president, like Clinton was, no matter what your promises you promise on the campaign trail, blah, 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 when you win, you go into this smoky room with the 12 industrialist, capitalist scum f***s who got you in there. And you're in this smoky room, and this little film screen comes down, and a big guy in a cigar rolled a film. And it's a shot of a Kennedy assassination from an angle you've never seen before. That looks suspiciously off the grassy knoll. And then the film, the screen goes up, and the lights come up, and they go to the new president. Any questions? Just what my agenda is. First, we bomb Baghdad. You got it.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest, and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccine, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics.
No taboo topics.
No fear of doom.
No fear of doom.
We are.
We are.
American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio.
Get ready. Get ready for the Ocelli Effect. The most underrated voice in all media, the alternative, Chuck Ocelli.
And the second hour of the Ocelli Effect begins. My guest tonight, Brother Gregory Williams from his Holy Church, which you can find on the internet. Before we go too much further, I actually want to give you a chance to verbally tell people about the website really quickly, and then I promise we will go further into this discussion about the collective consciousness. I want to run the terminology and the explanations that we have seen of the Christ consciousness, as a the so-called Christ consciousness that is often discussed, and then continue further into the discussion about the end times just a bit. But very happy to have Brother Gregory on with me tonight. Can you tell people about the website and the books and things like that really quickly? I mean, there's so much to tell them about. We could probably devote the whole hour to the amount of work that you put in, the radio shows, the written work, everything. But I'd like to just give people a starting point, if you don't mind, for where they can find.
Sure. Well, hisholychurch.org is one of our main sites, but we also have preparingyou.com, preparingyou.com, and that's getting to be quite a big site too, and everybody who is a part of our network, the Living Network, which is a network of people all across the country, even we're going to have people out here from Australia this summer, for discipleship and to learn and start to do other projects. The particular topic we're talking about now is not something I normally write about in great detail or even slightly, hardly, but we're dealing usually with more practical issues and maybe kind of testing whether or not you're listening, what spirit you're listening to, what intuition you're listening to, because life is a test. And so we're creating a network like the early church did, not like churches do today. We're just way different than what you would normally find in your average run-of-the-mill church. And so we got all these books that are free. You can download them for free. You don't have to pay us anything. We have hundreds of articles, audios, but we also have a living network that you can join that will start to connect you with people in your area. We don't sell anything. We're not grabbing people and making them members, but we're connecting people who are starting to wake up and helping them wake up even more. The topic that we're on here, I do make reference to the collective consciousness, and we can talk about terms like Christ consciousness. We usually refer to those kinds of discussions as what we call campfire talk at one of our festivals or gatherings. Or just our meetings, and we talk about that because it's on a more of a personal basis. We don't want to create a new, superstitious religion or anything. But we also see the practical reality that when you start to live your life a certain way, understanding begins to awaken in you. And then you start to see, we've seen miraculous healings. We've seen all these things. We're not promoting that as if that's where you come and join us and you get these things. But we see those as a byproduct of changing the way we approach life, approach each other, interact with each other. And right now, most people are interacting with each other on a very low basis, very selfish basis. You know, I mean, Facebook is, people think they have friends on Facebook. Real friendship was life and death in the old days. Those bonds went deep and lasted for generations. We've become a very superficial nation, a world. I've got one son in Sweden now, and I'm sure he's going to come back with all kinds of stories and stuff like that when he comes back. But anyway, preparingyou.com, hisholychurch.org, and get in touch with us there, and we can show them lots of things they won't, like you say, you won't find anywhere else.
Absolutely. And I do all the time talk about the surrogate nature of society. You know, this is the point we've reached where everything is done by surrogate, whether it's, you know, via the electronic devices and things like this. People have entire relationships, without ever, you know, touching one another in a significant way. And this is not the way we're designed. I don't care what you think of the creator. We are creations one way or another. And as creations, this is not according to our design to behave this way. We're meant to be, psychosocial creatures. I mean, that's the best way I can describe it. In fact, our socialization is really just as important to us as food and water. I give thee, for instance, that newborn babies, you know, if they are never held, if they are not interacted with, will often die, even if they do have the food, water, things like that. You know, older people do not live as long when they live in isolation. It seems to me as though this is also part of the essentials of life, that we interact with one another. And this may very well be one of the reasons why we see such an unhealthy mass psychology in a lot of ways, such an unhealthy collection of emotional beings in some ways, because we are acting against our own nature, I think, by participating in the surrogate reality. And a couple of things have happened. And by the way, I will want to open up the phone lines for the last portion of the show. So 218-339-8525. If you call that number, 218-339-8525, you'll be on the switchboard, and I'll add you in to make a comment or ask a question as the discussion continues, because I would really like to hear what other people are thinking about what we're saying. Also, a question came via text. You know, what would coming together look like? Is the general question. I don't know what that means exactly, what they meant by that question, but what do you think coming together looks like, I guess, in a societal way?
Well, in a societal way, coming together, if you know, when we talk about organizing the church according to the first century church, and I'm telling you, most people who you tell that to have no clue what that looked like, what was actually happening. These people, the early Christians weren't like your modern Christians at all. They weren't arguing over a lot of this doctrine and dogma and, you know, all the things that we see that divide 40,000 different denominations of Christianity. That just wasn't the case. Most Christians lived mostly like Jews at first because that was their culture. And then you had the Romans becoming these followers of Christ who had a different culture. And then that's why you have Paul writing the whole book of Romans. Most people don't understand what was going on at that time. What were these guys doing? What was so different? Well, one of the things they did was they organized in one of the most ancient forms of government, which they call the tens, hundreds, and thousands. Or tens, fifties, hundreds, and thousands, a couple different patterns. But basically, 10 families got together. They picked a connecting individual, you can call a minister, and that individual got together with nine other guys like himself who was serving a congregation of 10, and they created a network that reached from Ireland to Norway to Germany to North Africa with these tens, hundreds, and thousands. It's the way the Teutons organized. It's the way the early Celts were organized. It's the way many of the tribes of England were organized. In this tens, hundreds, and thousands. And what was the binding glue of those gatherings, those pre-assemblies of 10 families, was the fact that they gathered together to become the social welfare of their society. They, you know, if somebody got sick, they went to the house and they laid hands on them. I mean, there was, you know, we call it, what was it, Reiki? Now, as the Japanese word, but they actually laid hands, they touched people, they brought in oils, and washed people, and they got better. They also brought food, too. If the father was injured and he couldn't make, you know, a living, couldn't produce food, they ran short. Maybe some, you know, herd of buffalo ran over their garden, or something happened. People shared food. This was a social welfare system that was based on faith, hope, and charity, and free will offerings. At the time of Christ, almost every social welfare system in the Roman Empire was based on forced offering. Except for this guy comes along, John the Baptist, and says, make straight the way of the Lord. Don't do it by forced offering. He says, if you have extra, share. You know, if you have two coats and your neighbor has none, share. Do the same in meat. So he was bringing the people back to this idea of caring, where you actually lay down part of your life, your energy, your time, your money, your oil, your life force.
Right.
Because you care about somebody else's life force as much as you care about your own. We see the antithesis going on in society today. Everybody wants to take from their neighbor. They want more health care. They want more. They want free college. They want, pay for my birth control, pay for my abortion, and take it from anybody who has more than me. And that's a different spirit. And if string theory is correct and we are in parallel dimensions, which is what string theory tells us, you know, what mathematicians tell us, that there's multiple dimensions out there. They built the CERN collider to open a door between this dimension and the next dimension. Well, then one of those dimensions may be aligned with the idea that it's okay to take from your neighbor. And the other dimension, which you might want to call heaven, is aligned with the idea that you should lay down your life willingly.
Right, and
the well-being and good of your neighbor.
And we discussed this last time regarding the concept of charity, right? Where
right.
If it is a voluntary system, there is nothing wrong with someone receiving these things. Let's just say education. Okay. There's
right.
Nothing wrong with someone receiving a free education if it is willingly given. If I wanted to educate 1,000 people, this is a good thing for me to do, and it's a good thing for them to receive it because I chose to give that. If I wanted to give away a portion of my food to those who do not have food, this is a good thing because they have received it, they have gotten their sustenance, and I have also done a good thing. And this is the positive way that it's supposed to be done. It's not supposed to be grabbed by either taxation or by the forced tithing, if you will, where someone says, you know, you must do this in order to continue on, or in order to not be a criminal, or in order to be part of XYZ. The truth is that freely giving and freely receiving amongst people is something that is, again, part of the natural order of things, much like that socialization I was talking about, right? Sometimes you receive attention, sometimes you give attention. It seems to be part of the natural process of interacting with one another. You don't force socialization on people. You know what I mean? I don't like say, okay, Gregory, you're going to have to go and spend time with this person. By me doing that, that person's not going to gain anything. I mean, just in a practical sense, because you don't really want to go there, even if there is a way I can force you to go. This is not going to be a productive relationship that's going to emerge from this, is it?
So it seems to me
counterintuitive.
We've actually seen this taking place in taking care of elderly people, or even sick people, is that if you get the county nurse coming in or somebody who is compelled to, you know, the mercenary who comes because the government's paying them, we see an immediately different result in the health and well-being of the individual on the bed when somebody shows up out of love rather than simply because they're getting a paycheck. They can do seemingly the same chores, but with one, there's a healing that takes place, and with the other, it's not the same. The healing is not as dramatic. As a matter of fact, often we see the reverse. We see bed sores showing up, and rashes breaking out. But then when you bring in the people who come out of love and personal sacrifice, who've made a life of this, suddenly, you know, who won't take government money, refuses the offered money from the government, won't take it, only will take free will offering. You see miraculous healings taking place. Now, that's just me. I could be crazy as a loon, and I'm not proving it. I'm not bringing people evidence, but I'm giving you my observation. So when people are asking, what does it look like to come together? Well, you know, both groups have come together. The group that thinks it's okay to force their neighbor to contribute to everybody's welfare, and the group that says, no, we should come together out of love for one another and do it by free will offering. Because I heard Hillary the other day, my radio in the truck miraculously started working when I was out on the desert, and I got to hear Hillary's speech. It was the only thing that came on.
Okay.
And, I thought it was interesting that I made a comment already. I don't usually listen to those things, but I was fascinated by the cheers of everybody cheering for the things that she said. And she was talking about love and kindness. We needed more love and kindness, and everybody cheered. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm not sure that she's using those words, love and kindness. I do not think they mean what she thinks they mean.
No,
I think they mean something different.
I appreciate the message, but the messenger is questionable, at least.
I mean, I don't want to pick on her because she's not here, but the reality I'm not convinced that what her term, love, means the same as when I say it. I'm telling you that there's a division taking place in the minds of people.
Well, let me quickly provide you with a second witness to something, though, okay? Because you stated about the whole thing with healthcare. You know what occurred to me is that I can provably see this in my own life. I already have seen it, and I didn't realize it. I've been married more than once, and the women that I have married have ended up in the healthcare field. Okay, they've been in various situations where they worked in nursing. All right, or actually, Kim was an EMT, this kind of thing. But anyway, when they were caretakers, right, it's pretty interesting that when they took care of someone that they weren't necessarily assigned to, but it just kind of came together where they happened to be their neighbor and they were just offering their skills to help out that neighbor. Now, that neighbor could have, because of their sacrifice of their time and things like that, given them a pay or assistance with something or you know, in one case, a new car was given because this older person no longer needed their car and they wanted, you know, and just basically they gave them the car while they were sitting there and taking care of them. In the instances where these women were taking care of these elderly people and it sort of came together out of happenstance, those elderly people thrived by the care that was given by the women that were in my life. And it wasn't even necessarily that, because it wasn't something that was like an assigned job. It wasn't done by the numbers and it wasn't, state mandated or anything like that. It's just a situation that sort of came together where that person offered something back to them and it became almost like a job, but not really because it wasn't mandated like a job. It just so happened that they had some skills they could offer to assist that person and those people that had been helped in this way, so that they could remain in their homes and they didn't have to go into a nursing home and this kind of thing, did so much better when, you know, when my late wife and another woman that I'd been with had taken care of these people, during a time when that was just offered as a neighborly gesture and then it would turn into something where an offer was made back. But these were both free will exchanges. And even though we're not talking about the most highly skilled medical care or anything like that, I'm talking about just companionship, assistance with minor issues, you know, the groceries, the food, this and that, you know, house cleaning, care of certain medical things, different tubes or whatever it is they required. They seem to heal, improve, and actually do better despite the, you know, diagnosis or prognosis of the medical professionals who were supposed to have more knowledge. They always did better when that situation emerged in that way. When they would go into a nursing home, it was like a death sentence. And that's just the way it went. They didn't thrive and they didn't survive.
Right.
And, it just occurred to me that I've seen this in my own life, what you were talking about specifically.
Yeah. Everybody who's a professional caregiver, they're not all made equally. And we've seen this where you'll go into a hospital. I'm thinking of one particular hospital that I've been in and there's a,
oop. I don't know if maybe you hit a mute button or something, Brother Gregory, but I seem to have lost you there. I don't know if you can hear me. Oh, he dropped off the line. Well, unfortunately, I hope that Brother Gregory calls back in quickly because I think he may have accidentally disconnected himself. But meanwhile, I do have a caller here who I wanted to take. And so 505, you're on the air. 505 area code? Well, okay. Maybe everybody's phones have dropped or maybe I've screwed up somehow. The system appears to be all right. But this is a fascinating topic. I'm going to put you back on hold, 505. I hope you can hear me okay because I cannot hear you right now. Anyway, there we go, on hold. Yes, and I'm going to put the other line on hold as well. Okay, everybody's on hold for a moment on the phones, and I do promise I will get back to you. It's just apparently there's a little issue there. We'll get that straightened up. But in the meantime, for those of you listening and not really caring what happens to my phone, my switchboard, you know, the reality is this, that there are certain ways that are more natural for an individual to conduct themselves. And it sounds like one of these sort of, you know, hippy dippy sort of idealistic positions to take, you know, when it comes to being freely willing to care for, to defend, to protect, to uphold and uplift your neighbor. And again, it also probably sounds like I'm preaching in a Christian sort of way, but I say it over and over again. I'm not a Christian, but intuitively, I know that that this type of behavior is certainly what should be encouraged. It is part of the natural order of things. It is part of who we are as creatures. Like I said before, it doesn't matter what you think of the creator or the creator concept. We are all creations. Some would say that we are animals. Others would say that we are a creature similar to animals, but we are not animals. I tell you, put all those arguments aside for a moment and just think that we are living beings at any rate. And in that vein, in that way, since we are living beings, we have a natural way in which we are constructed. There is a logic to our construction, very much like we feel pain as part of our natural construction. Pain is not an enjoyable thing, but it certainly does tell you, even if you cannot see that something is sharp, that you should move away from it, because pain transmits a signal to you that makes you move away from it. So does fire, and so does et cetera, et cetera. Just like the burning in your chest tells you that you need to take a deeper breath sometimes. All of these things, these are the physical, obviously, but intuition is part of the system by which one can interpret their pain and their discomfort and know that something wrong is happening, as well as, just like, you know, things which are pleasurable generally can be positive, okay, and have positive results. You know, laughing is an enjoyable thing to do, and people will tell you it's very healthy, still sticking with the physical. But at the same time, in a psychological way, it is good to utilize these types of things. Emotionally, it is good to laugh. It's just a good thing, a therapeutic thing to do, to laugh, to take a deep breath, to relax. Also, it is a good thing to exercise and to engage in the world around you with your own body, et cetera, et cetera. All of these things are relevant to this discussion, because to me it's about going along with the natural order as opposed to going against it. And the concept of charity, which we did discuss, okay, in the last episode when Brother Gregory was on, you know, that is something that's very important, and I think has a great deal to do with the evolution, and that we could be embracing a whole lot more right now. See, here we go again. I know I'm sounding like trippy dippy hippie fool over here, but if you take a step back and you don't think about the ways in which this has been represented by others, and you just imagine that truthfully, giving, being charitable is a form of positive and natural action. It's not just that this makes you a great individual. It makes you a productive individual within the system of the living organism that is this planet, that is this reality, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that is a big point as far as I'm concerned. And again, I don't care about which position someone takes regarding dogmatic approaches or religiosity or religiousism, etc. That's not the key to me. The key to me is that human beings, individuals, should be engaged in life as they were intended to be, and the intent can be measured by witnessing and understanding your own components, your own construction. Okay, this is extremely important to me, because I think this would solve a great many problems if we behaved a lot more according to our own natural design. Now, one might say that God created us this way, and therefore, or the gods, plural, created us this way, or we came to be, et cetera, et cetera. But look, even if you tear all of that away and you just think about the fact that you are a creation of your own parents in a biological sense, okay, but regardless of who the creator is, there is a logical sensibility to your construction, not only in the physical
realm, but in the psychological, you know, in the emotional, in the spiritual, all of these realms wrapped together have a natural order, have a natural system. And the devices by which people deceive themselves, whether it's by eating food that is not food, participating in relationships that are not relationships, you know, being a part of things that are negative, but really doing it in a vicarious nature as opposed to actually participating in things directly. This in and of itself, even if you're not being overtly harmful, is counterintuitive to your being. I've probably lost every single normal listener I have already, because this just seems like one of those crazy idealistic journeys that I'm taking here now by myself, right? and unfortunately, I'm still trying to straighten out the difficulty here with the technology. But this is me having the conversation without Brother Gregory. Actually, he's back on the line, but now I've got to get the facility back in to bring him in. I will bring him back as soon as I can. There is a great deal to be said about embracing one's own natural design. It is intelligent design, in fact, and don't give me the crap about intelligent design is a dogmatic argument. What I'm saying is that there is a logic to the design of the human being. There is a logic to the design of animals as well. I know when I had the Greek on this show, or when I was on Ocelli in the Greek, he would very strongly advise me not to say that human beings were animals in any way, shape, or form. But in a comparative sense, one could take a moment and think that, dogs are constructed in a certain way so that they can accomplish certain things. When one embraces the idea that our design is inspired based on a certain tenets, okay? This means that there is a way of looking at this where one can examine the logic of the design and realize that some things are more conducive to that logical design than others. And like I said, actually participating in relationships, actually participating in the natural and positive physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual pursuits that one is truly intended to by their design, again, leaving the argument of the designer out of it, this is what the great positive thing that I believe people can begin to embrace once they put aside all of that which they prejudicially view as really the important things in the world, right? So there you go. That's really what it's all about as far as where I'm coming from on this. And I think actually I'll be able to grab Brother Gregory back in just a second here. Brother Gregory, can you hear me, sir? Hello? Well, for some reason, I still cannot quite get him to hear me. Let's see what else we can do here. But,
This line is now unmuted.
Again.
There we go.
Hello, can you hear me?
Now I've got you back, sir. The technology revolted against us temporarily there, but what I was discussing while you were gone, just in case you missed it, was that, that to me this is extremely important because it is all part of our natural design to engage in things in a certain way. And I talked about the physical version of this. I talked about the symbolic version of this a bit, but the truth is that the reason why it is so important to participate in things in such a way that is of a particular character, that is of a particular way, like the concept of the free exchange of ideas, of skills, of love and enlightenment, truthfully, is not just an idealistic thing. It's actually what is more conducive to our design as
people.
It fuels
the furnace.
Yeah. Exactly.
If you don't give life, you know, that's one of the things Christ says. You give life that you may have life more abundant. And what I was talking about is this woman who wanted to get healed. She thought, if I just touch him, I will be healed. Well, she touched him, and he felt energy, virtue, he called it, go out of him, and she was healed. Now, she'd been sick for years and years and years with a bleeding disease, and now she's suddenly healed. And he says, who touched me? And they said, well, everybody's touching you. They're all around you. But she was receptive to the Spirit, this Christ consciousness, this attitude of Christ who came to serve others. She was receptive to that because she came because she wanted to be healed, not just so she was better, but so that she could serve others. And this is what real Christianity was, you know, the early Christianity was about. It wasn't an ego trip. It wasn't about what church you belong to. It was about being connected to this idea of caring about others. I mean, everybody who's a mother, I just had a daughter who just had her first child, and, you know, they're just absolutely enthralled with the idea of raising this child and giving life to this child, giving their time to this child. That, and when you don't have that, you have children who suddenly have sudden death, syndrome, where they just suddenly die because nobody's nurturing, nobody's reaching out. There's an actual physical, spiritual virtue, power, whatever you want to call it, that is being transpired between one person and another. Just the other day, somebody was talking about wet nurses, that a person born with a genetic disease, not in every case, but they've shown cases of this, where their wet nurse does not have that genetic problem, nurses the child, and the child is healed of the genetic disease, and they don't know how that happened. But the wet nurse did not have the genetic problem that the mother had, that it was passed down to the child, but the child was healed because it had a different wet nurse. Now, I'm not going to say that happens every time, but the reality is there's a lot more going on in our day-to-day exchanges than we realize, even on Facebook.
There's whole journals devoted to what you might call miraculous or counterintuitive things to the medical or scientific society. Listen, since I just straightened out the phones and they are open still, guys, and I've got everything under control now, 218-339-8525, 218-339-8525. I had one caller who held on through this whole little electronic fiasco we had, Brother Gregory. So I'd like to bring them in now, to give them a chance to say or to ask the question that they wanted to ask or whatever, if you don't mind, because they sure held through all of that. So, and I appreciate your patience as well, because, something rather, out of the ordinary happened there. And well, here we are. So, let's see. Now I believe I'll be able to bring you on. 505 area code, you're on the air with Brother Gregory and Chuck Ocelli. Hello.
Do you have a question, caller?
They may have been muted up and waiting all this time and forgot to unmute. All right, well, that's okay. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay, and I'll come back to you later. Maybe you had trouble getting out of your mute button or something. I'm sorry, but I felt a need to go to that person, because they had held on through all that. And if anybody else wants to, you can call in, and I'll try and get to you before we're done here. But continuing on, though, sir, yes, these things happen in a medical sense. You can see them occur. And sometimes diseases are removed from people. Sometimes damage is healed in a way that literally defies what they would call medical science. And
right, and actually it doesn't once medical science gets a bigger picture. The fact is everything is, you know, miracles are natural if we take in all of God's nature, all of what God is thinking. But because we've been stuck in this tree of knowledge, that, you know, I mean, for years, science was telling us that that infection was caused by a vapor. It wasn't caused by germs or what have you. They right. didn't even believe in germs, and doctors were infecting people. And then suddenly somebody discovers germs. Although if you go back intuitively, way back to the days of Aristotle, he was talking about the possibility of these things. He couldn't see them under a microscope, but intuitively he knew that such things could exist. The reality is that it's even more complex than the fact that here's a germ, here's a bacteria, here's a virus. There are other spiritual, even more subtle energies at play, just like genetics. People talk about mm-hmm. genetics, but now they discover there's something called epigenetics that isn't in the double helix, but it's in the cell that actually turns on parts of the double helix that they thought was dormant.
Oh yeah, the epigenetic reaction is really interesting, because the way it was explained to me in a very basic sense the first time is that yes, you can have a strand of DNA which contains many different things. However, what happens is some of these particular assets are turned on and some of them are not, based on input coming from other places, like if you have a baby in the womb that may develop a genetic problem. Well, you know, if they're well fed and well taken care of and, you know, the mother is kept in a certain condition, this will not necessarily flip the negative switch that might have been flipped in other babies, that have the same or similar genetics, I should say, to that baby because of other things that are causing reactions in the genetic makeup, right?
Yeah, just look at your patient. If you yell and scream at the patient, if you create an environment around the patient that is ugly and crude and that you have an effect on the patient. You bring in young children in an old folks home, and everybody's blood sugar levels out, and their high blood pressure levels out, and they can't figure out why. Well, or you bring in dogs, pets, and they see an effect on the person. Why? Because the person has this, you know, the animal kind of has this unconditional love, and people not only need to be loved, they need to love others. And we see a dramatic effect in an old folks home. Well, the reality is what's happening in our society today.
Well, and the other thing that's interesting too is when you take and add elements like art therapy. Now, people don't think of this concept very often, but you go to a children's hospital and all they're doing is staring at tubes and machines all day. They stay sick. It seems as though a lot of healing gets accelerated, encouraged, and even emerges in places where they think it would not when they add the element of art therapy. They have these kids expressing themselves, talking to one another, socializing with one another, socializing with other people from the outside who are not sick, and all of a sudden their mindsets change, and there's a literal physical reaction to this in children even, who are basically given, you know, hey, we're going to draw something, and they create something. And by creating something, they strengthen themselves, which is an interesting thing and it literally is something that you can observe physically in the progress of their health. I mean, it's actually one of those things that's encouraged a lot now in these cancer hospitals and things like that for kids. So it's not just the elderly that are kind of reinvigorated by the young or something like that. It's literally the idea of participation in life in one way or another. and the reminder that all things are not illness and sickness. That is the encouragement that actually encourages healing, and it's got nothing to do with a biochemical, you know, introduction of some healing medicine or procedure or anything. It's got to do with, again, the natural order of the being, right?
Right. The one of the most common problems in America today is supposedly depression.
Right.
Depression is a very, even like schizophrenia, there are people curing schizophrenia on a regular basis. There are, depression can be overcome. And again, it goes back to these basic formulas that are actually mentioned, you know, by Christ in the Bible, where he talks about laying down your life so that you can have life more abundant. Depression is, your life is depressed. In other words, your life force is depressed. You are degenerating into a diseased state where you're going to have health problems and everything else, and you're actually going to become proud of your health problem. We see some horrible situations with depression, when reality is that this can be turned around, and we've seen it turned around in people. And, you know, I'm not going to say positive thinking or anything, but you have to start caring about others as much as you care about yourself. Now, how does somebody do this just simply by intellectually telling them? Well, you can't, because a lot of times these problems are way below, you know, way beyond the intellect, on the other side of the intellect. They're in the spiritual realm. People talk about healers. Many of the healers I've seen out there are people proposing themselves to be healers, or actually robbers. They're taking energy. They like to heal in crowds, big groups, get the people worked up. What they're actually doing there, Christ was, you know, this woman just touched the hem of his garment, she was healed. Two things, Christ had the source, and the woman was willing to receive the source of the energy that Christ had. So she had to be compatible with Christ's thinking. Now, Christ actually means anointed. His name was Yeshua, or Jesus, as we call him today. But he had to be compatible with the mind of Christ in order to receive the healing of Christ. And so what about the charlatan who's out there getting people worked up to create an energetic situation amongst a bunch of people, get them all worked up in the same way, at the same time, listening to the same music, the same kind of events, and then he goes and he's healing somebody, supposedly. What he's actually doing is taking energy from one group and putting it into other people that are there. They're actually, this is not unlike a socialist government. They're conning people out of their energy by getting them all worked up, and they're putting it into other people, and you will see healing. Most of them will be temporary. Occasionally you may see something that's a little bit more permanent. And you can duplicate this. People can show you how to duplicate this with other people. But that's not the real healing that I'm talking about. That's not really the life-giving, where you become the source of life rather than simply exchanging it one from another. Now, we all do this. We all have this ability. Mothers do it. The kid falls off his bike. She brings him in. She puts a Band-Aid on him. That care that mother is presenting by this ritual is doing more to heal the child probably than the salve itself. The salve may have some physical effect, but without that caring, there might not be as good a healing or as quick a healing. By the same token, what if you have somebody who's administering this care that has some evil in their heart? I mean, we just had some woman who was supposedly a babysitter, and she cut the head off of the baby and, you know, ends up in the train station with the baby's head in a bag.
Oh, yeah, oof.
So who's your caregiver? So we go back to the original question before we run out of time. What does coming together look like? Well, who's coming together? What's the spirit that's driving them? We don't talk about all the bad things that are going to happen you know, all the time on our radio shows and when we talk to people and all this stuff. Because we don't want to attract all kinds of frightened, selfish people who want to survive. We want to attract the people who want to lay down their lives for one another out of real love. We don't want love that's going to weaken the poor. We want the love that's going to strengthen the poor. We want to bring those people together as a witness to everybody else. But we don't want to be like Sodom and Gomorrah, who in a time of affluence, they weakened the poor, which is what we've seen go on in America in places like Detroit and Baltimore and these cities that are just become wasteland because of the wrong spirit of socialism, which is the antithesis of charity. It's destroying those societies. There is a reaction coming out of the people now where people are actually wanting to care, wanting to do something. If they see the injustice, they see the abuses, they see, you know, totalitarianism rising on the horizon. They see the vulnerability and they want to do something about it. Those people need to come together with that spirit and start touching one another's lives in little ways. And they, if we could get 5% of America to do that, you would see a change like we saw in the Roman Empire.
Well, and here we go with only 5 or 6 minutes left. Wow, time has flown by very quickly here with you tonight, as it did last time, by the way. And I really hope we can do this again because we barely even touched on the topic, really, of the end times. But I'll tell you what we did touch upon, which I think is absolutely essential and is wonderful to do, which is that everyone who can hear what I'm saying right now, if you begin to check your intentions, if you begin to act for the sake of others, to help to lift up your neighbors and the people around you, if you begin to act in this way, if you don't try to impress upon others fear and loathing, if you actually participate with especially your neighbors because they're in close proximity to you, but your neighbors, your family, the people that you interact with on a daily basis, if you're giving to them something which has a positive intent, and I do mean that could be the exchange of words, that could be the gift of ideas, that could be the gift of some food, that could be the gift of a skill, that could be many, many gifts. In other words, the more you actually give in a willing way to lift up one another, it'll have an effect. And a tremendous, large effect. And it doesn't take money. It doesn't take, you know, oh, gee, I don't have a lot of skills. I don't have a lot of money. I don't have a lot of things to give away. I don't have a lot of food to give away. You know what? I don't either. But if you act in that positive way, you take the time to give someone something like an ear that'll listen to them for a moment. You give them something like encouragement, or you give them something like a little bit of help because you notice that someone is struggling with something and you're in a position to assist them. When you do that, that good intent is not the small thing that you might think it is. It is exactly the kind of thing that can change all of the negativity you see, if that can be encouraged, reproduced, and the ripples can get much, much larger, and it won't be a pond anymore. It'll be an ocean where you'll see waves that will change everything. Now, if you want to argue with me, Brother Gregory, go right ahead and tell me I'm right.
We haven't had any arguments yet, have we?
Oh, no. I gave it to you purposely that way because more than one person said, you know, you're going to have a guy on who's very religious and you're not very religious, Chuck, you know, and I think you're going to wind up arguing with him. But how am I going to argue with the truth? It doesn't necessarily matter. Even if you were speaking in another language, I might be able to feel the truth coming from you, and I do. And that's why I absolutely enjoy and appreciate the fact that you've taken this time with us twice now, and I hope to do it a third time, and we'll continue to see what we can do, because I think this is exactly the type of thing that needs to be encouraged. No matter where you go, who you are, what you have, or what you do, I think if we encourage people to reevaluate this and begin to behave in this way, we can literally change the world we're observing.
Yeah, we can be the world we want to see in others. This idea of coming together, I can tell you, everybody who wants to come together, and we have a network based on geography, so that people will come together in local groups, local communities, but still not forget the sight of the whole nation, the whole world at the same time. But you've got to have that local contact. But I can guarantee that everybody's not going to come together for the right reason. But coming together will reveal the error so that we can do something about it. And that's why we need to come together.
But anyway, absolutely.
At the end of another hour.
We're at the end of it all, and I give them the website one more time, and then I'll say goodbye.
PreparingYou.com, PreparingYOU.com, or HisHolyChurch.org.
Absolutely. Brother Gregory Williams, and God bless you as well, sir. Brother Gregory Williams was my guest tonight on the Ocelli Effect. Stay tuned to American Freedom Radio. It may not be quite as uplifting as this hour, but something good will come up next. Thanks a lot for listening, guys. I'll see you on Monday.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at hempusa.org.
The last hour of American Freedom Radio you have been listening to is proudly sponsored in part by BigReggaeMix.com, the global healing station.
Produced by Mitch Santel and executive produced by none other than Errol Brown, winner of 5 Grammy Awards and the last producer and engineer of Bob Marley. Visit us now at BigReggaeMix.com for the latest show schedule, updates, and blog postings. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, too. BigReggaeMix.com.
What is the big deal about swearing to God in the first place? Why does swearing to God mean you're going to tell the truth? Wouldn't affect me. If they said to me, you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God, I'd say, yeah. I'll tell you about as much truth as the people who wrote that Bible. How do you like that? Huh? Swearing to God is kid stuff. Swearing to God doesn't mean anything. Swearing on the Bible doesn't mean anything. You know why? Because Bible or no Bible, God or no God, if it suits their purposes, people are going to lie in court. The police do it all the time. all the time. Yes, they do. It's part of their job to protect, to serve, and to commit perjury whenever it supports the state's case. Swearing on the Bible is just one more way of controlling people and keeping them in line, and it's one more thing that holds us back as a species.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics.
No taboo topics.
No fear of doom.
No fear of doom.
We are.
We are.
American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio.